defines American culture at this point. We can't hold the cup. People get in the car. Where is the cup holder in this car? This is insane. Get some wheels on the luggage. Get me a belt clip for my cell phone. Get me an earpiece, too, and not one that you take in and out. Drill it right into the side of my skull. You have a dog, and the dog, they give you a leash with this extra leash wound up inside. In case the dog pulls it, you hit the button, let the line out like he's a marlin. Nobody wants to do anything but lie in bed. Anything, if you're not in bed, it's work. Even death, people want to be in bed. I always read that he died in his deathbed. I always read that in the paper. Why would you even buy a bed like that? How are you going to start feeling better sleeping in a deathbed? Where is that section of the furniture store? These are our deathbeds over here. We also have a death side table, death reading lamp. Is that a death clock radio? Yes, but there's no snooze. Either you get up or you don't.
Everybody, I got a text message a few minutes ago. Is a real type mower okay for No Mow May? This is No Mow May coming up, where they don't want you to mow your backyard because the honeybees, you know, the bees need to go and pollinate something. When some mowing your lawn so fast, they have nowhere to go. Yeah, I guess so. Doesn't suck up nests in the ground. I think he's talking about a push mower. My wife said to me, why don't we get a push mower? That's spoken like somebody who doesn't mow the lawn. I said, you know, well, I got a mower now that's nice and powerful. I just kind of touch it and it goes. She goes, yeah, but a push mower would be better. I said, how is a push mower better? It doesn't sound better to me. But anyway, that's what she was talking about. So it might be better. We got another person asking, is the 62nd district open or is Cruz running against incumbent? I don't know. We'll have to ask somebody a little smarter than me for that. If you do have a text question for us, you can do that for our guest coming up in just a moment here. The number to call is, number to text is 262-300-7445. That's 262-300-7445. I wish it spelled a nice word. That way I could just give you out the word, but I can't. Doesn't spell anything. I tried. 262-300-7445. If you have a question for our guest, and it's Aaron Lawler's here. And we also have Lee Widener. Are you related to the Widener in politics here in town? No? Okay, I'm going to open your microphone so you can talk to us. You're not related?
No, not related.
Thought you were. I thought maybe you can answer that question then. Okay, you guys are from the Racine Astronomical Society, RAS, and you can check out their website, rasastro.org. Now, you guys hold your meetings at the Modine Benstead Observatory.
Correct.
Now, who owns that thing?
How old?
No, who owns it?
It's board ran, so we're members of the board. And essentially, it's not owned by any individual. It's board ran and club ran. Yeah.
So who does the upkeep on it? You guys?
A group of volunteers.
Okay.
Yeah, we're 100% volunteer run. So we don't have any paid staff. And basically, everything gets done by our volunteers who give their time and sometimes their money to make sure that everything keeps going.
Well, that's good. And I've been there before. I went to one of your nights, and it was beautiful. It was a beautiful night. It's such a shame when you have a public night and it's cloudy outside. Mm-hmm. You guys should know the weather forecast a year in advance when you set these
things. Yeah, right. That would be nice.
You can't know it within 24 hours.
I think it's very mean of you to schedule something a year in advance and not knowing if it's cloudy. But we were there that night, and it was a beautiful night. Hundreds of people on the grounds, families. Now, they have the two big observatory telescopes, but there are many ones on the ground. Some club members just bring their own telescopes.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So while you're waiting to use the big ones, and the lines move really fast, by the way, you can, and they have it aimed at whatever we're looking at. The night I was there, it was the moon, and I couldn't believe how you can see all the details of the moon. I've never noticed them before. You know, you look up at the sky, you see a white ball, maybe you can see some, you know, stuff on it. But I was able to see the craters almost in 3D.
Craters inside of craters.
Yeah, almost in 3D. Now, I didn't want to give up my, you know, I went to look for a couple of hours, and there's a line of people, you know, looking at their watches, and, you know, come on, you've been there 45 minutes already. But no, it actually moves faster than that. But that's really good. Give us a little history of your club.
So it was established in 1956 in a backyard on 900 Villa. There was only a couple members, and they came with the idea of eventually, you know, being able to build a telescope large enough to show the public. At the time, it was just neighborhood kids coming over and getting dilly bars. And eventually, my grandpa was one of the founding members, and he was working for Modine at the time. And he went for no talking to Mr. Modine. He was in the drafting room designing a telescope, and he went up to Mr. Modine and said, "Hey, I have an idea. Would you be interested?"
To the Mr. Modine himself?
Arthur B. Modine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he said, Mr. Modine said, "Well, I have another friend that is an investor, and let's talk to him." And that was Mr. Benstead. And at the time, he was in charge of Golden Books, which, if you know Golden Books, that's Disney.
This is Modine Manufacturing. This is the Modine, and this is Benstead from the Golden Books.
Correct. Wow. So they invested in it, and they bought the land for $2,000 because that's what the farmer that owned the land needed for a new tractor. So they bought the land, and then Nelson Construction came and did the building. And then for building the telescope, everything was manufactured by local manufacturers such as Twin Disc for the gears. And it was a group of electrical engineers and mechanical engineers, and they all designed everything, and they hoist that giant telescope that's about 3,000 pounds with the mount and telescope onto the single largest largest concrete pour in the state at the time. It goes about 6 feet into the ground, and it's massive telescope, about 3,000 pounds.
Now, there are two of them there.
Yes.
So there's a smaller dome and a bigger dome.
Correct.
Observatory. So which one were you talking about, the bigger one now?
Yeah, the bigger one. The smaller one is a Meade. It's a 14-inch Meade. That one is made by the company that is Meade. That's a different company. The one that's in the main building, that one was manufactured all by local people and made by local people with their hands.
Mm-hmm. So we went out there with our binoculars anyway, just to see, because we have decent binoculars. But when I went into the observatory, it's nothing like what you see through binoculars. Binoculars are nice, but it's hard to hold them steady.
Yeah.
Because your hand just moves, and you get them so zoomed in.
They have stands for those now.
Yeah.
I know, but...
Right, yes.
I'm a newbie at this stuff. I'll tell you what we got started with this. We have a friend of mine who I used to work with in radio, and she follows the Starlink stuff. All those satellites that go into space. And she always posted, go out tonight at 9:02, not 9:03, not 9:01. Go out at 9:02, and you'll be able to see the satellites, Starlinks, going across the sky. Mm-hmm. And I went out there one night, and I saw this was amazing. Starlinks, the satellites would go, I saw them move, and it looked like a white streak going across the sky. Then she said, on this night, you'll be able to hear the space station. And I went outside, and I heard the buzzing of the space, and you could see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually heard the space. You can hear the noise of the actual space station going overhead. And so we got involved in that, and then my wife found out there was a public night at the observatory, and we went out there. But before that, we found out there's the Parade of Planets, and I think that was It was last year. I can't remember when it was.
I think it was about 2 years ago. They had a Parade of Planets.
Well, they had one last year. Oh, yeah. Last year, the Parade of Planets, where you can see not all of them at one time, but because some are on the horizon when it's still sunny.
You really can't see all of them either. Mercury, you wouldn't be able to see.
No, no, no. You could, it was, they said it was on the horizon, but you couldn't see it because the sun was still up.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to get away from the area where the lights are. First, we pulled into the Racine Theater Guild parking lot.
Okay.
But there were too many trees blocking stuff. We didn't count on that. So then we went out a little further, and we said, too many lights. So we went out to the county about three blocks from the observatory. Mm-hmm. We passed it. We said, well, we can't go there. Let's go to someone else's property. And we pulled down this street, and I pulled onto a driveway of somebody's house. And I'm going to go knock on there. Tell them we're in the driveway because we couldn't park on the road. It was too thin a road, and there might be a car coming by. But it was beautiful because there was no lights on the horizon. It was all farm field. There were no lights. So I knocked on their door, and they weren't home. And I said, oh, and I saw a camera. and I kind of spoke to the camera, said, we're here just using your driveway to watch, you know, and they weren't there, obviously. So we parked in their driveway, and we saw the planets. And my wife has this thing on her phone where if you aim it toward the sky, it will tell you what you're looking at.
Yep.
So we use that. But it was just before sunset, and we couldn't see the planets on the horizon because they're still. But just to see them up there and know what you were looking at, Mars and and wherever planets we were looking at that day, that was really amazing, and it got me interested. And then we went to the observatory after that, and we said, let's take a look at this stuff real close. Now we saw the moon, but you guys look at the planets also, right?
Yep.
So how do we know what we're going to see that night? Are you going to aim it toward a planet or the moon? Do you know?
Well, a little. It varies because all the members on the lawn get to decide what they point their telescope at. So sometimes we'll look at planets, and sometimes it might be the moon, and it might change throughout the entire night because things rise and set throughout the night. How we decide what the big telescope looks at, I don't know. Aaron, you run the big telescope often.
It depends on what's out there. I mean, so like if you have a new moon, which is like a moonless mm-hmm. night,
yeah,
then it'd be a good opportunity to look at some deep sky. And a lot of, I mean, one of the great things to look at through that telescope would be star clusters. And it just looks like a blast of trillions of stars.
Do you get, can you see, when you look at a planet or a star cluster, can you actually, instead of seeing a white line going across the sky, you actually get to see?
You see a burst of stars for a star cluster, but for like a deep sky object, like a galaxy or a nebula, it's white light because the cones in our eyes can't actually decipher the color.
More coming up in just a moment with Aaron Lawler and Lee Widener. They're from the Racine Astronomical Society, rasastro.org. It's 719 WRJN, hometown radio refreshed. Stay where you are. At WRJN Radio, increasing cloudiness today with 165. Looks like cloudy sky tonight. Maybe a chance of showers. Lows around 50 tomorrow. Partly sunny. Chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs near 67. 42 and sunny. Beautiful morning. 7:21 at WRJN. And our guests, Aaron Lawler and Lee Widener from the Racine Astronomical Society. And they're in charge of that giant observatory telescope you see there in Yorkville, the Modine Benstead Observatory. And there's a public night coming up where you can actually go out there, park your car free of charge, roam the grounds, and see what's above us in the sky. Hopefully it'll be a clear night. When is the public night coming up, by the way?
On Friday.
From 8 to 11.
Well, that's good. And bring the kids with you. They're going to love this. Yeah. And there's, we got a whole bunch of things on your calendar here. Spring Astronomy Day is Saturday, May 18th. What's that all about?
That's just the National Astronomical League. It's when they make their, it's kind of like a calendar they have. We tend to follow it to some extent to our open nights as well.
What's Friday, June 14th from 8:30 to 11?
That's just another open night.
Oh, is it? You get two open nights in a row there. That's nice in June. June 14th, which happens to be Flag Day as well. Solar Observing Day, Saturday, June 29th from 1 to 4 p.m.
That's where you get to look at the sun without getting spots in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
Solar filters.
Oh, yeah. How did you guys do on that? Did you guys have a big thing on the eclipse day out there?
Actually, we did not have any events for the eclipse because for astronomers, really totality is where you want to be. And since totality was not here, a lot of our members were traveling. I went to Arkansas. I know a bunch of people went to Indiana to see it. And Aaron, you went to Texas?
Yeah, there was three of the board members down there in Texas at the same spot.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because until you hit that 100% totality, you can't look at it naked eye.
Right.
And being able to see the eclipse naked eye is just a game changer. You don't have to wear the glasses, you don't have to see anything, and you can see the details of the corona. And that is awe-inspiring. I think the first eclipse that I went to go and see, the thing that blew me away the most was how big in the sky the sun actually is. Like, you can see the moon, but it seems small. And when you realize they're the same size and you see how large that eclipse looks in the sky, it really
perspectively
is.
Perspectively the same size.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to get back to the eclipse in just a second, because if I don't tell you this, it'll fall out of my head. Sometimes, over the lake, I'll see the moon, and it looks huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to our meteorologist one day. He said, that's an optical illusion.
Yep.
I said, well, I know it's an optical illusion. It didn't grow. But why does it look so big?
Because your eyes have something to compare it to.
Right.
Really? Is that why? It doesn't. It's not. It's an illusion, obviously.
It's an illusion because your eyes have things to compare it to.
So here's a trick you can do. If you hold your hand out at arm's length, and when the moon looks really large, just put your thumb up, like, in your visual field with the moon. And then later on, when the moon looks small, move your arm up and look at it, and you will see that relative to the size of your thumb, it's exactly the same size.
Look at this, what I'm learning today. Yeah, because I live right near the lake.
Okay.
And I see that a lot where I'm driving by, and I say, look at the size of that thing. There must be something with the atmosphere, and it's not the atmosphere. It's just now I can look at it compared
to
the lake.
Because, not even that. I mean, anything that's at ground level, you're looking at it in comparison to that, and you're saying, wow, that is massive. But in reality, it does not take up any more real estate when it's low on the horizon to when it's in the center of the sky.
I didn't think when you guys came in this morning I'd learn a thing.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I thought I knew everything. Now I have knowledge I can bring back home to my wife and say, let me tell you what I found out. Double your thumb up here. Now, with the eclipse, I went out. My next door neighbor happened to have the glasses because I tried every place at the last second. They were selling them at the, what gas station is that? The Speedways. They were all out. I tried every Speedway. And I took it out. First, I thought I can do it with my sunglasses. You can't. That doesn't do anything. And I saw the partial eclipse, and I'm sitting there with my mouth opened up like I'm some kind of, I got a mental patient. With my mouth opened up, staring up at the sky. And then my other neighbor came out, said, can I see? And she was out there with her mouth opened up, too. It was an amazing, even a partial, you got to see it. But I saw on ABC, they were running the eclipse all across the country. And David Muir was out in, I think he was in Burlington, Vermont. He was up there. and you saw, and then he took off his glasses, and he was looking at it. And they mentioned something about the beads.
Yes, and Bailey's beads.
Bailey's beads. I wasn't quite sure if that is the ring around it, or they were little dots.
So what they are is light diffracted through the features of the moon. So it makes like a little beading on the edge. When the mountains and things like that and the moon, the rigid surface, creates diffraction and light.
So what were they talking? Was it the little, what was I looking
little,
at?
Little beads of light coming out, but you wouldn't have seen it. Yeah, unless you saw it on the TV.
Yeah, that's what they're
so
talking
it just
about,
looks like little beads of light on the edge, right before totality.
Now, I saw the diamond ring effect.
Yes.
That was obvious when it came. It looked like a diamond ring.
Right.
And you went to Arkansas? Did you see it all there in totality?
Oh, yeah. I saw Bailey's beads. I saw the diamond ring. And I think the thing that, well, last eclipse, I was very blown away by, like, the size of the objects in the sky. This time, I wasn't prepared for a solar maximum eclipse.
Yes.
In that way, we could see a solar flare naked eye. Normally, we have to look through telescopes in order to magnify them enough to see them. But at the bottom of the sun, clear as day, I guess, there was a red line coming down off the bottom. And I wasn't prepared for that.
And that solar prominence was three times the size of Earth.
Oh, yeah.
You know what this whole thing reminded me of that day? I was just in awe of what I was watching. I had to watch most of it on ABC. They showed everything on there. And even when I went out and saw it myself, we are very tiny in this universe. Mm-hmm. We're just little specks of dust in the universe. We think we mean everything, but we mean nothing when it comes down to it. We're not in control. You know, whatever God created in the universe or whatever's up there, that's in control. We're not in control of anything. If that sun decides, I'm going to explode today, and we're gone.
Or fling out a mass ejection at us. It doesn't really matter.
So if the sun decides, I've had enough of this, I'm tired, we're done. I've got to ask you, when we get back from the break here, I've got to ask you about, when I was in school, I learned we had nine planets. All of a sudden, we don't have nine anymore. Well, we're going to talk about that in a moment, what happened. We used to take tests and everything, and if you couldn't name all nine, you were in trouble. Now you only have to name eight. That's coming up. Aaron Lawler and Lee Widener, my guests from the Racine Astronomical Society, rasastro.org. If you have a question for our guest, you can text me at 262-300-7445. At WRJN Radio. Thank you for joining us today. We have two wonderful guests today. Aaron Lawler is here along with Lee Widener from the Racine Astronomical Society. We're going to go to their website, rasastro.org. If you have a question for them, you can text me, 262-300-7445, 262-300-7445, and we'll ask your question. If it's, you know, not stupid.
There's no stupid question.
No, there are no stupid questions. You're absolutely right. So we're talking about space. We have the, let's remind everybody, this Friday night is the public night in Yorkville at the Modine Benstead Observatory. And where exactly is that? If people don't, it's on Highway A, right?
63rd and Highway A.
63rd and Highway A. You can, right off the interstate. And you go over there and you can check it out. And it's free to roam the grounds. There are smaller telescopes set up by members, so if you think the line is too long for the big one, and the lines go real fast. because they say, oh, now you can see this. Next! You come up here, little boy. Let me look at that. Next! But it does move fast, and that's good.
Yeah.
And you do take donations there.
Yep.
We popped a $10 bill in, so that was kind of nice. Just pop some money in there because it is free, and it does take money to do all this stuff. I mean, the people keeping, you know, I know that you guys are volunteers, but when you need hard equipment, companies aren't donating that stuff. You have to buy it.
Building maintenance and taxes.
Okay, so when I was in school, we learned there were 9 planets.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, one day, there aren't 9 planets anymore. There are now 8. What happened?
So I, like a lot of people, were very disappointed. I'm like, how can Pluto no longer be a planet? But then I read a book called How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming by Michael E. Brown. And basically what happened was they discovered that Pluto, while it's a wonderful world worthy of study, is not exactly unique in our solar system. Basically, they started finding thousands of bodies very similar to Pluto. And we had a choice. The International Astronomical Union had a choice. Either we could incorporate thousands of other things as planets as well, or they could reclassify it so that way we had a different category for the significant bodies and a different category for other types of things. It would be like if all of a sudden we decided every asteroid is a planet. There would be thousands, hundreds of thousands of asteroids included in that list. But those planets interact with our solar system in more significant ways than some of these, I'm going to call them lesser bodies, but they're still really fascinating and interesting.
I had a book called Astronomy when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. This is back, my brother got it in the late 50s. And they were talking about Pluto. They called it Planet X. It was way out there in the solar system. Why did they think it was a planet to begin with? You know, somebody named it a planet. Who did that?
Well, you got to remember, science is 99.9% certainty. And that one, that 0.0, or that 0.1 always can come up later and make a change. And that's what science is. And that's just new discoveries with new technology.
I remember when my mom and dad took me to the Cinerama Theater to see 2001, A Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. This is when it first came out in Cinerama. And we were just floored by it. My father came out in the lobby and said, what the heck was that all about? But I looked at it and said, wow, this is amazing what's out there. Because Stanley Kubrick did a great job at portraying what life is going to be like. He got it wrong when he said they were calling on the Bell System telephones in 2001. But here we are, 2001's a long way away, long gone. And they had us on Jupiter. They had us on all these planets. And now we're talking about Mars in reality, actually being on Mars. I don't know what the temperature of Mars is. I don't know what the air quality is. I'm sure they don't have any. So is there a possibility we can get on that? Now, we've sent things to Mars. There are things walking around there. I was amazed about the photography on Mars. Crystal clear. When somebody robs a bank, you can't make out their face. It's so blurry. And that's only 6 feet away from them. But here we are on Mars with probably a camera that cost billions and to get it there. When it landed and they started sending back these pictures, you guys must have been floored by it because it was so clear and sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were great.
So when are we going to get there?
Well, I'm no astrophysicist or astronaut, but I mean, I think they're working on that, right? I mean,
well, they got something there. The trick is, do you know how to get it back?
Well, they get the data back through satellites. Mm-hmm.
But can you get a human being back? Or you just say, welcome home. This is your new home.
No, I think there's, right now, I think they always have a
They have a return. Contingency plan. They work on getting fuel there in bits and pieces. I think the movie, The Martian.
Oh, I saw that.
If there's any movie that I think really depicts what the reality of it would be
Matt Damon, yeah.
Yeah, I think that movie probably depicts it because they had, you know, the extra ships there. They had extra fuel there all before they actually went there.
And he built a garden.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought that movie was spectacular.
Oh, I did too.
The most frightening movie I saw about space was the one with Sandra Bullock in 3D.
I never watched that. I have a fear.
You know the one
that
I'm talking about?
No.
What was the name of that movie? She was stuck in outer space. She couldn't get out of it.
I think it's Gravity, isn't it?
Gravity. And it was in 3D. I took my mother to see it. And she's the 3D was so good, she was reaching in the air, trying to grab the tools that were leaving her, but she was trapped in outer space.
Yeah, I couldn't. I can't watch that movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what happened, but it had a good ending to it.
That's good.
Somewhat good. Not for George Clooney. It wasn't a good ending. But...
Is it ever for George Clooney?
Yes, I'm sure in life he does have some good endings. There. What is the name of the telescope here that's in space right now? We're seeing all these great shots of
James Webb.
James Webb Telescope,
yeah. Massive Cassegrain Telescope.
Now that the images, they can bring you into other galaxies. They can get you way out there.
The idea of that telescope was to get beyond the red shift, which is ultraviolet. That was the premise of it, because it's way out further than the Hubble Telescope.
Okay, so the Hubble Telescope and the James Webb Telescope. What's the difference?
They're both Cassegrain telescopes. One has an incredibly larger aperture and is further out. And the coatings are different, and the technology on it's different.
Which sees further?
James Webb, because it's out past the redshift. It's all about wavelengths of light.
When you say it's out past the redshift, that means nothing to anybody listening, including
it's far
you.
Enough away that it does the light from the sun is not affecting it.
So how many miles away is it?
Oh, I know it's out past the moon.
Oh, it's not that far.
It's far enough.
I mean, it's far enough, yeah, but I thought it was way out there in another galaxy somewhere. No,
it's far enough that it's going to be real difficult to maintenance if anything ever goes wrong.
What, now, how big is it?
It's massive.
Well, okay, the telescope at your observatory, how big is the lens, you said?
It's a 16-inch.
16-inch. Mm-hmm. What are they talking about with this James Webb?
I would have to look that one up.
I thought you guys knew it all.
No.
Oh, there is so much to know. Like, two people can't possibly know it all, you know.
So. I'm a big fan of movies, and everybody says to me, well, you know everything about movies. No, I don't. I know, I have pockets of information I know, but I don't know everything. But
yeah, I can't even get a signal to figure that one out.
Oh, yeah, we have Wi-Fi in the building, but you didn't check on we have a Wi-Fi clicker on there. Anyway, but it's big.
It's massive.
Now,
and it's a folding mirror, which is incredible.
Are they getting images back 24/7? Or we just...
I think so. Yeah, I mean, they're like stacked images. So the way astrophotography works is it's like a composition of multiple images in order to stack it. It's not just like a click and it's done.
Now, who controls that telescope?
I think
NASA?
It's not controlled by any one entity. I think there's a whole group involved worldwide that helped get that telescope up, and I think different people have access to use of it.
Yeah, and you have to submit proposals in order to use telescopes like that, and the governing body then decides which proposal has the most merit and then slots them into the time zone.
One in Hawaii, I think you can submit time on it if you're involved with it, and you can do it from your laptop at home.
Really? So anybody can take a look through that telescope anytime they want?
Essentially, yeah. There's like, you have to have a reason for it.
Oh, I just want to look. That's not. I just want to
I'm
see.
I'm sure you can look it up on some of the ground telescopes that are out there that are computerized.
So today is Earth Day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I remember the very first Earth Day. We were talking about it with Sister Janet Weicker a few minutes ago. She was in college. I was in high school during the first Earth Day. You guys weren't even born, probably.
Nope.
So you guys are talking what's not on Earth. But do you have anything to do with the planet Earth? Does your astronomical society do anything to do with the Earth? It's just you guys want to get us out there.
I mean, we have to explain that atmosphere is thick and creates turbulence.
And you were telling and you were telling me before the break was on, I was telling you where I grew up, we didn't see stars. It was just too much pollution, too much light pollution is mainly it. There were lights everywhere. So when I looked up, I didn't see stars. Occasionally, maybe you see some of them. And then I moved to Georgia. And I said, whoa, but you showed me a map of light pollution.
Yes, the United States light pollution, mostly in the east. But
yeah.
LED lights, the white and blue, or the blue and, what was it, the wavelengths is blue and white, right?
Yeah.
And they keep you from seeing the sky.
So gradually over time, in the years that I've been a part of the observatory, even when I was there as a kid, you can see that light, that aura of light rising higher and higher and higher on the horizon. I mean, that's because of the amount of LEDs and just industry moving in. I mean, Foxconn lights up You can see
really
the aura of that since they built that area and did all those LEDs on that road on H.
Wow.
It's horrible.
And the biggest problem is we're not directing the light exactly where we need it to go. In some cases, like governments will put street lights up that shine light up into the air. And light going up into the air does nothing for whatever the purpose of the light is. Yeah. It just looks cool in the moment. But when they do that, they're hiding what looks cool in the sky, you know. So how we combat light pollution is simply putting on light fixtures on our homes and on our streets that shine the light down and shine it on the object we need to illuminate, and not shining it in our neighbor's yard, in their bedroom window, or things like that. Shining it on the street that we need to illuminate, and not shining it up into the sky where it's wasted. I mean, that's wasted money.
We can also use different spectrums of light to light your surrounding area, mm-hmm. like red light or orange light.
See, this is Earth Day stuff. You guys are involved.
Yeah, I mean, because it does affect animals, too.
Well, sure. And that was the thing you talked about, the eclipse. Now, I didn't see any in my neighborhood. I did see the street lights come on during mm-hmm. the partial eclipse. I was out there, and my neighbor said, look, light just came on. So I don't know if it affected animals coming out. Because
it did. When I was in Texas and when it was totality, all the birds stopped and you could start hearing crickets.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Just for that short time. And then they went.
And then once it became light again, you could hear the morning birds.
Yeah. It's because they thought it was nighttime. You know, hey, it's dusk. Let's go to sleep. Let's get ready to go to bed.
Yeah, the birds in my neighbors, what the heck is going on here?
Animals are definitely affected by the light. And, you know, when we create light pollution, we are affecting them as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have a nature camera at home. My son got it for us, and my wife sets it up in the backyard, and it works in 10-second increments. So you put it down somewhere, and you leave it there all night. And every time something moves, it clicks on, and you see for 10 seconds what's out there. You can't believe what's going on in your backyards, folks, in the middle of the night. You know, we're sleeping, and there's a lot of activity going on there in your yard. Possums and all types of critters. A fox you may find in your neighborhood. You might find a deer running around your neighborhood. There are cats roaming around all night long. We're watching this thing. All of a sudden, a giant face came in front of the camera. It was a cat. And he looked in the camera, and you see these giant whiskers and these two big eyes. But you see possums and everything running around out there at night in the darkness. I'm going to get a lowdown in just a moment here, how you guys get started in all this. Because there may be some young kids today saying, I want to be part of that. I have this little telescope my parents got me for Christmas. What do I do? That's coming up here at WRJN. I'm Don Rosen, 749, Hometown Radio Refresh. You got a question for our guest? 262-300-7445. 262-300-7445.
Jell-O, you know what they make Jell-O out of? Bones and hooves. I always thought that was an urban legend. Bones and hooves. What kind of madman?
Let me have the bones and hooves. I've got an idea for a kid's dessert. It'll be huge. We'll get Cosby to do the commercials. Everyone trusts him. Anyone using the eyeballs? I can make an abacus. I've got tons of ideas. They say laughter is the best medicine, and it is, after you've received real medicine from a real medical professional. Prior to that, you don't want any laughter. You don't want a doctor giggling during an exam. Oh my gosh, this is your body? Oh, nice man boobs.
Easy love.
93 WRJN, Hometown Radio Refresh, a civic media station. Aaron Lawler is here along with Lee Widener from the Racine Astronomical Society, rasastro.org, rasastro.org. Check out their website. You guys have public nights once a month. I didn't realize it was every month from April through October. That's nice. And just hope for a clear night.
Yeah, that, I mean, we have had cloudy nights before, and people will often ask us, well, are you going to reschedule if you have a cloudy night? And it takes so many volunteers to make these events happen that it's really difficult for us to reschedule. But if people want more astronomy in their lives, if you become a member, we have additional events that are just members only. So instead of sharing the observatory with 500 people on a public night, you would share the observatory on a members' night with maybe 35 other people, and basically you get to see more astronomy during those nights.
And how do you become a member?
Well, it's pretty simple. You send in an application and you pay your dues. And you can pay your dues either online or through the mail or by showing up to one of our events and saying, hey, I'd like to become a member.
So how did you, before we ask, tell how other kids can get started in astronomy, how did you guys do it?
I grew up with it.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time out there when I was a kid, my grandpa being the guy that pretty much ran the 16. I mean, I was out there in the middle of winter in a sleeping bag just waiting for Jupiter to cross the slot. And he just said, don't tell your mother, and I'll make you Belgian waffles in the morning.
So you actually grew up with it.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of...
It's ingrained into me.
You didn't just wake up one day and say, I want to see what's up there. It was.
Later in life, I did.
Yeah, but you were kind of brought into it at an early age. Yeah. What about you, Lee?
So for me, I always enjoyed science growing up. Like, I was one of those kids that had dinosaur posters and solar system posters. And then I kind of became a teenager, did teenager things. And then as an adult, I was looking for things to do in Racine because I wanted to just get out, do something a little different, you know. And on one of the free event boards, I saw that there was an observatory. And I'm like, I've lived here for how long at this point? Decades. And I did not know that there was an observatory in Racine County. And I'm like, how did I not know this? I mean, and people say that to me all the time at public nights. How did I not know you guys existed?
Well, that's
I'm
what
not
we're
sure.
That's what we're talking about.
It's that's the contrary. I used to think that everybody's grandpa built an observatory.
Yeah.
So young kids today, they want to get started. How do they get started?
I mean, there's a couple of ways you could get started. You can go out and get your first telescope, or like I was saying, you can become a member. You don't have to become. You don't have to have a lot of knowledge to become a member.
Is there an age limit?
No.
So a parent can join, and then anybody under 16, right?
Under 16 joins free.
Yeah, that they're free.
Oh,
they're,
good.
As a family. So if a parent wants to get their kids into astronomy, they can join, and then get their kids involved with that. I mean, we don't necessarily have like a junior program, but my kids are into it, and my daughter's got her own telescope.
So you're doing what your grandfather did.
Yeah, I'm nurturing it.
Yeah, you put him in at an early age. And you know what? This is not a fad. The world's not going away out there.
No.
This is not like the Macarena where people are going to forget about it in a few years. This is up there.
If the light pollution gets in the way, it might.
Well, yeah.
Well, then we're all moving to Montana.
All right.
Be able to see the sky out there. You know, I have never seen the Aurora Borealis in person, but I have movies of it, and I think that's an amazing thing. People in northern Wisconsin claim they can see it.
We've seen it here.
Yeah, we got pictures over the dome at the observatory.
Really?
Yeah. And when was the last time? Was it like November? Was the last time
I know is Brian's always out there when it's necessary.
I know last April was really good. There was a lot of good pictures that members got last year.
Well, I was in Alaska twice. Mm-hmm. And I never saw it.
It just depends. So you got to remember that's not just the Earth's, that's the magnetic sphere affected by plasma coming from the sun. Mm-hmm. So unless the sun is, you know, shot out a mass ejection that's hit our magnetosphere, you won't see it.
But I have a VHS cassette of it, and it's in 3D. You put the glasses on and watch the Aurora Borealis in 3D. Even just by watching it on the video, it's amazing. Well, this is great. So, again, the public night is coming up this Friday.
Correct.
Just show up. at the Modine Benz State Observatory in Yorkville on 63 and A, mm-hmm. 63rd Street and A. You park on the street. You know, the earlier you get there, the better the parking you'll get.
And make sure you turn off your lights if you go on the lot.
Yes. Turn off the lights. And, of course, people say, well, when should I get there? When it starts to get dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't get there any before 8 o'clock because it's too bright by that point. At about 8 o'clock, it starts getting a little dark, but there's still plenty of light where you can come and you can see the grounds and you can kind of get a feel for things. And it's also important to do...
Quick.
It's also important to do things like put bug spray on at home and not at the observatory so we don't have those chemicals all over the telescopes.
Hey, Lee and Aaron, thanks a lot for coming in, guys. Yep. We'll have you back many, many times. It's 7:58 WRJ, and I'm Don Rosen. Tomorrow we're back at 6 a.m.